Yes.
Good afternoon. I call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:31, Monday, April 1st, in 2019. Today is Monday. We're meeting in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please remember to silence your cell phones as a courtesy. Members present are Senator Coghill, Senator Stevens, Senator Baggage, and myself, Senator Wilson. We're expecting Senator Geisel to be joining us shortly. We were not able to get the work draft for the Medicaid providers incentive loan repayments for in time for this meeting today, so that item will be deferred to later this week. This afternoon, we'll return to Senate Bill 1, Repeal the Certificate of Need Program. We adopted the work draft and heard overview of the bill, sectional analysis, and took invited testimony on March 25th. Today, we'll hear from two other subject matter experts to testify on the bill. Deputy Commissioner Donna Stewart is here today to join us, as she was conflicted out on Friday. And on the phone to provide invited testimony today is Dr. G. Keith Smith from the Surgery Centers of Oklahoma and Sonia Content from the Natsu Borough as a Human Resource Director. With that, we'll start off with Dr. Smith. And Dr. Smith, if you want to take a few moments to give your invited testimony, and please remember to state your name and affiliation for the record.
Yes, this is Dr. Keith Smith. I'm medical director at the Surgery Center of Oklahoma, and I'm happy and honored to be part of this hearing.
All right, please start with your testimony, sir.
Okay, I was contacted by Gary Zipp wanting some comments about consideration of certificate of need. It is not in my self-interest to make this call because any relaxation of certificate of need regulations in Alaska will simply constrict the flow of patients that are coming to my surgery center in Oklahoma City from the great state of Alaska. I've always fought against certificate of need, though, because it was just raw protectionism, typically for the existing status quo in the hospitals in the area. It's still a prevalent problem, but increasingly it's not as much of a problem because a lot of patients are willing to get on an airplane and fly away. They typically will leave abusive pricing, in my experience. Most of the patients we operate on at the Surgery Center of Oklahoma now are not from the state of Oklahoma. They fly in here from all over the place. Alaska and Wisconsin are the two states that historically have sent us the most patients, and it's simply a reflection of the abusive pricing in the region. I would like to encourage you to completely rescind any certificate of need regulations that are operational there. But you have to understand that's not going far enough because the risk of starting a facility once the certificate of need regulation is gone, the risk of starting the facility is still very high. People will fear that the certificate of need rules will come back. And I think that if the state of Alaska is interested in better quality care and lower cost, not only should the CON be repealed, but the state of Alaska should consider buying from those who would display their pricing up front for all to see. And that would be a very positive move in the marketplace. All of the patients we've operated on here in Oklahoma that have come from Alaska have been thrilled with their care. They've been especially thrilled with the price. And, of course, they know the price before they get here, and it's exactly the price that they pay. And I also wanted to mention we have had an arrangement in the past with the Alaska Health Trust. There was a young lady named Rhonda who I think was managing the Alaska Health Trust for some teachers up there in a union. And they came down here in a pretty steady stream to have the surgical procedures that they required. So, you know, I would encourage you to rescind all of your restrictive language that prohibits new competitors from entering the marketplace, and it will lower prices and quality will soar, because that's what competition does. It typically makes quality better and prices lower.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Is there any questions for Dr. Smith? Senator Begich.
Dr. Smith, this is Senator Tom Begich. My question is very simple. Just about how many patients annually from Alaska do you get?
I don't have that in front of me. I would say annually now it's probably 50. It's been higher than that in the past, but that's probably right. It's annually we see four or five a month.
Follow-up, Sandra?
And the primary reason they give for coming to Oklahoma is the price is better, or the service is better, or both?
Well, initially, patients are attracted to the price. Once they don't know what the service is until after they've left, but I know they go back to Alaska and tell all their friends, because when I ask the next patient that comes, how did you hear about us? It's from someone else we've operated on from up there. And just to give you an idea, I mean, we charge about $4,500 for a repair of a ventral hernia. And I know one patient in Alaska was quoted $60,000 for the same thing. We have a patient coming here next month. No, this is April. We have a patient coming this month to have his knee replaced, who was quoted $90,000 up there, and our price is $15,499. So as long as you have regulations in place that prevent new competition, then the regular price gouging players have no incentive to address their ways.
Thank you. I very much appreciate those answers.
Any other questions for Dr. Smith? Thank you for being available today, Dr. Smith, and giving your invited testimony. Next up,
my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Next, for invited testimony, we have Sonia Connett from Mat-Su Borough. Sonia, if you're there, if you can state your name and affiliation for the record.
Hi, my name is Sonia Connett. I am the HR director for the Mat-Su Susitna Borough, and I was contacted by Gary Zepp to speak about our employee health insurance program, which through cost containment strategies, we have set up a program to send our employees out of state for surgery just due to cost, for cost containment purposes. So the Mat-Su Borough is a self-funded health plan. Right now we cover about 320 employees and 600 dependents. Back in 2010-2011 period, we were looking at ways to reduce our health insurance costs. Our medical claims for that plan year were $4.2 million, or $1,300 per employee per month. So through that process, we looked at a number of options to reduce care. Reduce cost and provide good care to our employees. In 2010, we joined the Healthcare Coalition. It used to be the HCCMA or MCA, and now it's the Pacific Health Coalition. What it is, it's a group of self-funded plans that have come together in Alaska and in the Pacific Northwest to join together so that we can negotiate with providers, pharmacy, benefit managers, et cetera, to reduce the cost to our plans. So through that, we looked at PPO agreements and the different network agreements. We changed our plan requirements, you know, some things we require pre-authorization for, so that was one of our strategies. And then we looked at our pharmacy spend, So throughout that, we were making good strides. So when I compare our 2010-11 plan year cost for medical of $1,300 per employee per month to our end of 2018 plan year cost to $1,548 per employee per month, over the course of that 7 years, it was a 19% increase, which is very good. So we've been able to keep our costs low and under the annual rate of healthcare increases. So what we did in September of 2017, because we still felt that we had additional money to be saved, is we joined through the coalition the Bridge Health Plan. And what it is, it reduces the cost for both the plan and the employee. It's a non-emergent surgery benefit. The providers that are part of the Bridge Health program are in the top 25th percentile across the country for their surgical specialty, and they base that on third-party data, care checks, hospital quality ratings, physician quality ratings. The employee has a choice to use Bridge Health or not. If they want to use their provider locally, that's fine. If they want to use their preferred hospital, which is Alaska Regional, that's fine. If they want to use Providence, that's fine. There's just different costs associated with that to the member. However, if they choose to use the Bridge Health plan, they have zero out-of-pocket costs, so there's zero deductible and zero copay that they need to pay. So what the program is it pays the selected provider a negotiated bundle rate in advance. So everything's paid for before the surgery even happens. And then the employee works with a care coordinator to get everything scheduled and coordinated with the provider. And then the plan sends the employee and an escort or someone to go with them first-class airfare, and then they have lodging accommodations and meal allowances for the time they're there. And when they're medically able, they're able to come back to Alaska. One of the concerns we had was that follow-up care may not be available, or some providers may not be willing to provide follow-up care for individuals that they did not do the surgery on. Fortunately, we have not run into that with the number of surgeries we've had, but in the event we do, there is a coalition network of providers who will be do the follow-up care if necessary. So the savings we've had, again, we just started this in September of 2017. For that plan year through October 2018, we had 4 surgeries total go through the Bridge Health plan. The cost of those 4 surgeries was just over $79,000. And the net savings for those surgeries was $104,000. So we're averaging about $25,000 to $30,000 savings per surgery. And this year so far, from November through the end of January, which is a 3-month period, we had 3 surgeries completed with a cost of $71,500 and a net savings of just over $76,000. So we're seeing the benefits of this program. Our employees who have come back have positive things to say about it. There was an initial learning curve that we had to go through. We found that there were delays caused by getting medical records down to the providers to review, but through additional communication and having the employees work directly with their local providers, we've been able to resolve that in most cases. So we're excited. We're certainly we would like our employees to get their surgeries taken care of as soon as they can and as comfortable as they can. But this provides them an option to get it done and not have any out-of-pocket costs and also save the plan money. One of the things that we've positive that's come out of this, we have had some providers approach, not us directly, but the coalition, and indicate their willingness to potentially offer the same bundled rate as we would get by sending them out through the program. So we've found this to be very beneficial. We're only in our second year, and as our numbers increase, we anticipate we'll be able to stay at or below the national health care increases for national health care trends. So that is it. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Yes, we do have a couple of questions. But first, I just wanted to verify what you stated there at the end, Sonia. Did you say with the competition you're able to provide that help lower your costs?
So either by competition locally with people saying, geez, well, we don't want you to send that out of state. We'll give you that same rate here. Yes, that's a cost savings measure. So this gives us another negotiating tool locally.
Thank you. Senator Baggage.
A couple of questions. The first one is, so when it comes to the Certificate of Need program, are you testifying that the elimination of the Certificate of Need program would create more options for you and more competition, consequently being able to keep that work, as the chairman just said, keep that work in state and competitive?
I don't know. It depends on the type of I come from a hospital background, so there have been a lot of for-profit surgery centers and day surgery clinics pop up. If this is going to get us quality care for the citizens of the state of Alaska at a reduced price, then I'm supportive. But I think it goes beyond the certificate of need. I think there's providers need to be upfront with their costs. They need to set them at a reasonable rate. I think the speaker before me was talking about providers posting their rates so that the employees, our employees, know what they're going to have to pay going in.
All up, Senator Baggage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bridge network you're using now, if indeed there was more competition, you wouldn't have a need for the bridge network because you would. The thought process is you would be able to do it locally. Would that be right? So that would go away as an employee benefit, right?
Yeah, it would still be there potentially as a benefit, but if competition was in and prices were reduced and the quality was at the same level, the Bridge Health providers are in the top 25th percentile. So we just don't want our employees going to the cheapest person. We want them to also make sure that it's top quality, because we don't want them to have to go in for additional services or potentially additional surgery. So if we get high quality providers and the rates are competitive, then I would imagine a number of our employees would prefer to stay within their home network.
One last follow-up.
Yes, Senator Baggage.
So how would we determine, what would be the criteria you'd want us to use to determine whether new surgery centers and such would be high quality, or new providers would be high quality? Where would you look for that sort of standard? How would you determine that standard?
They should have some indicators through their accreditation process and their reaccreditation process. The different agencies that do the accreditation look at that. And there are also third-party sources. So there's the physician quality rating. There's an analysis out there for physicians if they're doing it in a hospital. There's probably one out there for surgery centers in general. So there are quality indicators out there. And, again, that whether they're applying for a certificate of need or they're going through their accreditation process, there should be some measure of whether or not their services, there's quality and there's, the patient outcomes are higher than either average or they're at a place where that wouldn't raise any concerns.
Thank you.
Ms. Connett, what is the annual cost for insurance for the Mat-Su borough?
our annual cost for the whole thing, for medical, dental, vision, and then of course you've got administrative fees. Right now for total claims. It's about almost $8 million. Well, yep, about $8 million.
Does that equal, do you know what that equates to on the annual mill rate for the borough?
No, I don't have that information.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? Thank you again for being available to testify and provide feedback on your program. Next, we'll go ahead and open public testimony on Senate Bill 1. We do have... We take a brief at ease here. Back on the record here. We'll allow 3 minutes for folks to testify for Senate Bill 1. Please remember to state your name and affiliation for the record. We'll go in order of the folks that came, but first we'll start here in Juneau. If we can first have Ms. Jeannie Monk. See her, if you can state your name and affiliation, and plan about 3 minutes for your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeannie Monk, and I'm with the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. I'm here on behalf of Alaska's hospitals and skilled nursing facilities to testify in opposition to SB 1. There are four main reasons ASHNA opposes CON repeal. However, since I only have 3 minutes, I'm going to give you our summary in writing. We've been here multiple times in the past. Many of you have heard our concerns. Instead, I want to focus on one issue I heard during last week's hearing related to a delayed implementation until 2024 to allow DHSS time to build good regulations. We agree that problems exist with the current CON program, and we really support the idea of improving CON through regulation. However, we're concerned about whether after a full repeal, DHS will have the authority to draft regulations concerning CON-like activities. Our understanding is that if the repeal goes through, the existing regulations must also be repealed because the statutory authority that permitted them will have been revoked. So simply stated, how will the department know what to regulate without the statute? So if the goal is to improve CON by regulation, which we strongly support, why is it necessary to repeal the statute? We support the changing the regulation and believe repeal is not necessary and in fact could hamper the effort to improve regulation. Before my time is up, I want to respond on one more thing to the analogies that have been used comparing healthcare to coffee shops or fast food restaurants. The reality that we must face is that healthcare in Alaska does not function like a free market with or without CON. Using the fast food analogy, imagine there's a McDonald's on one corner and a Burger King comes in across the street with lower prices. Suppose McDonald's is the subject to the fast food equivalent of EMTALA. And must give everyone who walks in the door and asks for it a free burger and fries. Suppose that at 11 p.m. Burger King can close their doors, send everybody home for a good night's sleep, while McDonald's must stay open all night and give free burgers to customers that come in, including some with serious behavioral health issues who are sometimes violent. Suppose also that the community expects McDonald's to be prepared in case there is an earthquake or other emergency. Suppose that McDonald's rates are set by Medicare or Medicaid, and they can be cut without warning. This is not a free market system. We have where McDonald's is subject to certain regulations, and Burger King is free to operate as they wish. So Burger King is free to charge whatever they want, and they don't have to see difficult customers or give away the food for free. It's much easier for them to have lower prices than McDonald's because the expectations are not the same. Ultimately, it is not a free market if each business is subject to very different rules. Creating a free market for healthcare and repealing CON are two separate issues. So to conclude, we do not support the repeal of CON and would like to see DHSS work with providers to improve the regulations. We believe repealing it would have a destabilizing effect at a very uncertain time we face in healthcare right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Clarifying question?
Just a question, yeah.
Yes, Senator Kiger.
Have you put to the department any suggestions on the CON process that are either critical or suggestive of changes?
Through the chair, Senator Cockle, yes, we have. We had a work group that worked extensively over about 6 months and came up with a series of recommendations for regulation change that we shared with the department.
Clarifying question. Senator Baggage.
Is that available to the public? Can we have access to that?
Yes, I will have to check, but I don't see any reason why we couldn't share it. It gets very technical, but we're happy to share it if you would like to see it.
Mr. Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just talk about myself. I have three hospitals in my district, very small communities, small hospitals in Cordova, Homer, and Kodiak. And to an institution, they are all concerned about this happening, about CON being repealed. And they're concerned about the emergency wards and what they have to do, and the business that could be cherry-picked from them. Do you see a difference between smaller communities and larger communities? Can you address that at all?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I would say yes. I think there is a much greater concern in the smaller communities, which I would say would include Fairbanks, Soldotna, Homer, Juneau. I think in Anchorage, we've already seen widespread surgery centers. And in fact, I would say the market is pretty has a lot of surgery centers, and I don't think it's worked a magic of lowering prices. But in the smaller communities, Homer, for example, if a surgery center were to come in there, it would really could put the hospital at extreme risk. So, yes, I see a difference.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll go to the phones to Fairbanks. Mike Powers, if you can state your name and affiliation and plan 3 minutes for your testimony.
Thank you very much. This is Mike Powers, Chief Operating Officer at Tanana Valley Clinic, large 65 provider primary care clinic here in Fairbanks. Thanks for taking my testimony. We at Foundation Health Partners, which is a small health system consisting of Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, Tanana Valley Clinic, and Denali Center, skilled long-term care facility, oppose repeal of the Certificate of Need. I've been part of completing and defending Certificates of Need over the past 30 years. My experience in Fairbanks is that opponents of CON laws have been solely limited to profitable services, typically surgery centers and imaging centers. Opponents of the Certificate of Need and the inherent regulatory review of redundant niche services typically cite improved quality and reduced costs as justification for doing away with this public process. In other words, physicians perform a high volume of a narrow range of procedures in these imaging and surgery centers. Advocates of CON and meaningful regulatory and public review of these redundant health services, such as myself, agree that niche providers can theoretically create efficiencies, but typically at the expense of the greater community good and the community hospital. By one, cherry-picking the most profitable patients away from the general hospitals, and two, by essentially threatening the cross-subsidization of profitable services and putting at risk Medicare, Medicaid, behavioral health, primary care, pediatric admissions. In our unique Alaskan market, the absence of a meaningful regulatory review looking out for the community as a whole creates unfair competition. By siphoning off the most profitable patients in the most profitable parts of medicine, niche providers deprive general hospitals of the scale and the scope and the profit they need to operate the unprofitable departments such as burn programs, emergency rooms, behavioral health secure units that operate 24/7. My experience in Alaska these past 30 years has confirmed for me that physician-owned surgical centers tend to treat those who have better insurance coverage and those with lower clinical risk. This leaves the community hospitals like Fairbanks Memorial to treat the uninsured and the highest clinical risk patients. I also believe those who oppose CON regulations argue that niche competitors who are not subject to regulatory approval foster competition, lower charges, increase quality. I have seen no evidence of that in Fairbanks. The challenge to public policy is to facilitate development of a responsible marketplace, one in which the desired benefits of competition and real value in healthcare are realized. Meeting community, not individual investor, needs is a key to maintaining a responsible marketplace in the sole community hospital environments of Alaska. Through a balance of market forces, community planning, and certificate of need regulation, it's possible to shape a responsible marketplace. And we believe that the current market structure, though it's not a classically competitive one, achieves the desired goal of competition, greater access, lower costs, and higher quality of health. The CON helps create a responsible marketplace and outweighs the fairly simplistic view of the classic supply and demand model by, one, understanding the cost of cherry picking to a community, and by understanding who is and who is not taking their fair share of the indigent load, and by understanding who's taking their fair share of the Medicare and Medicaid load.
Mr. Powers, if you could wrap up your testimony, your 3 minutes is up.
Absolutely. Certificate of need, it doesn't limit competition. It promotes good community planning. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Powers. Next up is Fred Brown. Fred, if you could state your name and affiliation.
This is Fred Brown. I'm the executive director of the Pacific Health Coalition. Thank you, Senator Wilson and members of the committee. Ours is a nonprofit parent company, and the doing business as Pacific Health Coalition was formed nearly 25 years ago by four Alaska health plans, and it now comprises over 45 member health plans in Alaska and the Pacific Northwest. These funds consist of employer-sponsored health plans, including the state of Alaska, borough, municipal, school district-sponsored plans, as well as private employer and Taft-Hartley health plans. Our member funds represent over 100,000 employees and their dependents in Alaska and 150,000 covered lives in the Pacific Northwest. I would note that Sonia earlier from the Matsu Borough is one of our members, and she pretty well summarized what we do, but I'll just state again that the mission of our coalition is to ensure that Alaska and Northwest workers and their families have access to value and quality-based health care benefits and service. And to this end, we broadly encourage competition and open access to health care markets. 10 years ago, we testified in support of granting the Certificate of Need to the Surgery Center of Fairbanks. However, we think that this was insufficient and more competition is needed in Fairbanks specifically and the state of Alaska as a whole. As this committee is well aware, Alaska has the highest health care cost in the United States. We tried for many years to do our part to bring down these costs by contracting with orthopedists and other specialists in Fairbanks and across the state to add them to our preferred provider network. But it was only recently, after our member plans started contracting with Bridge Health that Sonia mentioned for these travel benefits, and their participating patients began traveling out of state for treatment, that local providers recognized their need to compete. And now we have orthopedists in our network. We believe that repeal of the Certificate of Need legislation is the next logical step to encourage competition. We think that the Alaska healthcare market should move forward towards free market operations. As to any issues associated with cherry-picking the most profitable surgeries, as well as the cost of indigent care and other regulations, we believe there are better ways to subsidize the providers. And as to the Certificate of Need legislation, we urge its repeal. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Next up, we have Ward Hinger.
Hi, my name is Ward Hinger. I'm the CEO for Imaging Associates in Anchorage and Matsu Valley. I stand in opposition of repealing the CON. More than half of the states, as many of you know, have some sort of CON. There's nothing about the CON that prevents competition. It merely provides a mechanism for the state to determine what kind of healthcare investment is needed and allow it to go forward in a planned and thoughtful and hopefully safe manner. Alaska requiring a CON does not allow one business or provider to create a monopoly or even prevent competition. The decision to issue or not to issue lies with the state of Alaska, specifically the Department of Health and Social Services. It's my opinion that removing the check and balance would negatively impact patient safety and the quality of care. Historically, the state of Alaska has been inconsistent, and I would even say negligent, in administering the CON, but not to limit competition. Rather, they have shirked a greater responsibility given them through the CON to demand quality, accessible investments that benefit all of Alaskans. Now, limiting the CON would do two things very quickly, in my opinion. And again, I have over 20 years of healthcare admin experience. Over half of that's in the state of Alaska. But first, it would encourage the worst kind of investment in healthcare. That is the kind that only intend to make money at the highest margins with no need to demonstrate quality, safety, or necessity. Secondly, it would cause quality centers currently holding CONs like ours to have to compete with other sites that do not share our community-minded view of service and quality. We would, in a sense, be economically forced to match their model. Currently, we, like the local hospitals, are an all-modality service, meaning we offer all imaging services for comprehensive and quality care. A number of those important services offered are at low margin to no margin, alongside of some of the highest margin CTs and MRIs. Our services include best-in-class 3D mammography, 128-slice dual-energy CT, high-field open MRI, and state-of-the-art PET-CT offered to all patients, no matter what their payer is or their payment status. We provide significant financial support to charity organizations in Alaska. We participate heavily in Anchorage Project Access Charity Care and offer those who don't qualify for charity care but remains uninsured a 60% discount. If, however, the state allows a high-margin-only site like an MRI or CT center to open on every street corner, bleeding away the modalities that pay the bills, we will be forced to scale back to the same level of exclusive or limited services. We more than likely will be forced to cease offering low-margin services and ultimately either cap the number of Medicaid and Medicare patients we see or end up not participating in either. In the end, I believe, and my physicians believe, Alaskans will lose. So rather than kill the CON and make Alaska the Wild West for healthcare, our legislator leadership should look for ways to strengthen it, to make it work even better. And in doing so, I offer three key opportunities for the state of Alaska to move forward and actually make the CON statute and regulation meaningful. None of them would create monopolies or even prevent competition.
Mr. Heyer?
Yes.
Sorry, Mr. Ward. Your time is up. If you could wrap up your comments.
Yes. So basically what I would recommend is just require each certificate seeker to clearly document how they demonstrate quality and maintain that quality. We're talking about different types of equipment. You have old equipment, new equipment. It doesn't matter what kind of equipment that you use. The bottom line is that payers are paying the same for it. Secondly, those people who do have CONs, I would force that they take all payer statuses, Medicaid and Medicare as well. But again, I don't believe at the end of the day that CON limits competition. If the state thinks there's not enough competition in some areas, all it has to do is prove more CONs.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. Yes, Senator Stevens.
Yeah, could I ask if you would send a letter to the chairman or some documentation? I'd like to see those three suggestions. I don't think I really heard them as fully as you were prepared to explain them. And would that be okay with Mr. Chairman?
If anyone testifying, we always encourage written testimony to be sent to the committee so we can publish that for the record as well.
Absolutely. Be happy to.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. All right, next up to testify is Patrick Shire.
Hello, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Patrick Shire. I'm the Alaska membership representative for the Pacific Health Coalition. And thank you for the opportunity to call in support of SB1. Rather than repeat the testimony of Sonia and Matsu and Fred, our executive director, I just restate that to the extent SB1 moves Alaska further in the direction of introducing more competition, which has been instrumental in helping us with the introduction of Bridge Health in particular, help to begin unraveling some of the world-class high cost, we support further introduction of more competition to help us move further down that road to lower cost, high-quality care. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Next up is Mike Prax. Mike, if you can state your name and affiliation for the record and plan 3 minutes for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike Prox, and I'm just representing myself. And I've been following this, I guess, like Mr. Powers, for about 30 years. And we're always at the same point of it is true that the hospitals in communities subsidizing low-margin services with high-margin services provide some community benefits to some people. But as you heard earlier today from the payers, if you will, and the gentleman from Oklahoma, the payers are going to solve this. Well, they're not going to solve it. They're going to get out from the if a service is too high a margin, they are finding alternatives. That is, provide an opportunity for people to go outside of Alaska to get those services. So the Certificate of Need program has skewed the market, which is, and you see in there in your fiscal note that it's the Medicare service that is going to increase, but it just creates one problem on top of another. And so I support repealing the Certificate of Need service and introduce some market-driven forces. And it is a situation that the market should resolve rather than three-minute testimonies in a legislative hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Prax. Next up, we have Jarrett Kusin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes, Jarrett. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You may begin your testimony when ready.
Thank you. My name is Jared Kosin. I'm the Associate Administrator at Mat-Su Regional Medical Center. Mat-Su Regional Medical Center opposes Senate Bill 1. The premise of the bill calls for competition and free market. The problem is this is not a free market or fair competition for hospitals. As you heard before, we are the only entities that are required by federal law, specifically EMTALA, to have a duty to treat all patients that come to the emergency departments. Think about it. Emergency departments are expensive. You walk in, all the physical overhead, equipment, the fact they're open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, holidays. Think about the labor force when you go through those doors. Those are all expensive, and we are the only ones by law that are required to provide it. EDs lose money. Emergency departments lose money. Highly specialized services like imaging and surgery subsidize our emergency departments so hospitals can exist. If Senate Bill 1 goes into law, we fear that several MRIs, ambulatory surgery centers, maybe even freestanding emergency departments will flood the market. A case in point is the state of Texas. We've been told by many anecdotally that you can't go a city block without seeing a freestanding emergency department trying to cater to patients with higher cost of care. Those entities that I just listed certainly will have the luxury of competition and the free market you seek. We will not. Unless you mandate all those other entities to be open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and see every single patient that walks through the door, regardless of payer status, your pursuit of a free market is not truly authentic. Fix the CON, update its formulas, do not outright repeal it. We commit to working with you on practical solutions. Until then, we respectfully oppose Senate Bill 1. And please note, we too listened to Senator Begich's question last week concerning regulations. If this repeal goes through, the existing regulations will have to be repealed because the statutory authority that permitted them will have been revoked. Therefore, we cannot see a way the department could continue to regulate with newer change regulations unless a new statute is put in place to authorize the regulations. Think about it. How will the department know what to regulate? It won't without an authorizing statute. A full repeal, regardless of the timeline, does not make sense. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next to testify is David Hyman.
Hi, this is David Hyman from Georgetown University. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you. I actually don't have as much experience with CON as the people who claim 30 years of experience, but I've been doing this for a while. I looked at this when I worked at the Federal Trade Commission, along with the Department of Justice. We did a report back in 2004 that reached some conclusions about CON laws. I see that the FTC and DOJ have submitted comments to the state of Alaska in 2017, 2018, and 2019 that reached some of the same conclusions. And those are very briefly that CON laws create barriers to entry which deprive consumers of the benefits of healthcare competition. I think you need to be realistic about the potential benefits of competition that in some parts of Alaska are not going to be feasible, but in lots of Alaska it will be feasible. There's lots of research indicating the beneficial impacts of competition. The second consequence is that incumbent providers can take advantage of the CON process to protect their current market position and their revenues. You've heard plenty of special pleading on behalf of incumbent providers of services in the short amount of time I've been on the call. I'd also reference you to the recent Alaska Supreme Court opinion in Alaska Spine Center v. Matsu Valley Medical Center for a case study of that. And I think finally and most importantly, CON has not achieved its goals. The subsidies that are used to cross-subsidize less profitable services are obtained by overcharging everybody else, and that's why the incumbent providers don't want market entry, because it makes it more difficult for them to do that. If you want to encourage people to provide certain kinds of treatment, the way to do that is to subsidize it directly rather than give incumbent providers a license to overcharge some people and offer cut rate pricing to other people. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Professor. Next, we have Monique Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Monique Martin. I'm calling from Anchorage, and today I'm representing Alaska Regional Hospital. At Alaska Regional Hospital, we oppose repeal of the CON program. At this point, there's not been a meaningful analysis of the effect of the CON repeal on Alaska's hospitals, so we would encourage the state to conduct a study to understand potential impacts before considering such a bill. We really need to avoid any unintended negative consequences through the cherry picking of patients before we move forward, and we believe we can do that through a review of the CON regulatory process. Repeal of the CON program could dramatically increase Medicaid general fund costs at a time when the state is trying to reduce them. The governor's budget includes over $700 million in Medicaid reductions, and a lot of those reductions are still unallocated, and that's created a lot of uncertainty already in the provider community. In fact, at Alaska Regional, back in 2017, we went through the CON process for a 24-bed acute adult psychiatric unit. This uncertainty at the state level has resulted in the an Alaska Regional placing that project on hold until we have some more stability in our current healthcare delivery system in Alaska. After going through that process, could the CON program be improved? Certainly. And we would encourage the Department of Health and Social Services to move forward with a review of that program and start with a review of the initial letter submitted from ASHNA to the department on opportunities to improve that program. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Seeing no one else online, is there anyone else here in the room in general that wishes to testify to Senate Bill 1? Seeing or hearing none, we'll close public testimony. I just want to point out a couple of additional items that we did include on some members' packets. I believe the Professor Hyman talked about it was the recent Supreme Court decision that happened on Friday. And not to weigh in on this, I'm just going to give a brief overview that, you know, it's basically that the department was able to, when we gave a little brief overview for all the members, this is just another example for us is why our CON certificate of need laws are very complex, difficult with the time, money, over 2.5 years spent and trying to circumvent processes, trying to get a clear definition of the regionalities of where certificate of need laws are applying in terms of the formula. You know, 2 years, 8 months, a lot of energy, legal costs. How much of legal costs has cost the state because they were in the co-defendant. We're trying to ascertain those numbers as well. Basically, if you have to avoid the fragmentation, to avoid a certificate of need twice, incumbents are able to interject other entities in the application process on these other two. And lastly, our office was just an incorrect determination by the Department of Health and Social Services going back and forth on their having one person decide that factor and then reverse that factor and then waiver caused a lot of additional headaches to the all entities that were involved between the Alaska Spine Center, the Wasilla Surgery Center, and the Mat-Su Regional Hospital. And it was a huge issue for my district that's impacted by this recent decision. And so obviously it's going to be appealed, so we're not going to talk about the merits of the case of what's going on, but we're just putting the facts and disclosures that were stated within the summary from that's in public record. Senator Baggage.
Just a quick question. You said that I didn't read that DHSS had reversed its position. In 216, they said there wasn't a certificate of need necessary according to the summary. When did they change their mind on that? I didn't see that.
I'm talking about the rule determining if Wasilla was included within Anchorage, the community of Anchorage. At one time it was, and now it's not.
Oh, so sometime before 2016.
Yes. Yeah, it was and was not. With that, I also just want to let folks know we did ask Ledge Legal to address Senator Baggage's question on they haven't gotten back to us. They're tied up with dealing with the other body's budgetarial process right now. So hopefully we'll try to get a Ledge Legal opinion here to the committee on that question. The idea was that those regulations would still be in effect up to 5 years up to implementation date of passage of this bill, which would allow them plenty of time to meet with those stakeholders to allow them to develop those new regulations and what statutes may need to be required to in order to get start the process. But within, as you heard, 30 years from folks dealing with this issue, it's been a long process going, and you know, we have over 40 years of research, economics, and just within the packets as well, addressing sort of the indigent care questions that obtain, sort of the rural health care questions. That's on tab 2 of your slide that goes over sort of the rural questions that Senator Stephen asked. And the reality of it is 33% of hospitals' charity care is 3%. That's the bottom line of what that care is for Imtala within the state of Alaska. It's not a huge percentage, and we feel that it wouldn't be hurtful for those entities and to allow other folks to come in. We've heard testimony from FTC and the Department of Justice in terms of competition. There's another article within your packets as well on their testimony in terms of what competition and health care. We all understand that health care is very complex. We're not saying it's exactly place of free market rules, but they do lay out a wonderful testimony that they gave to the state of Georgia and with the additional empirical references on why competition in healthcare is important, understanding that it is a different entity. It's not apples to apples as the free market for the Burger King McDonald's comments. It's quite unique. And they give that unique perspective in their article and your tab 3 of that as well. Are there any other questions? And Senator Geisel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's perhaps more than a question. I appreciate you bringing forward this bill. I actually was an observer at negotiated rulemaking on CON It was probably around 2006. I mean, I was a citizen. I don't recall exactly what year it was, 6, 7, somewhere in there. So we've certainly gone through that before on CON. I completely agree and say multiple times, Alaska has the highest health care costs in the U.S. U.S. has the highest health care costs in the world. So I support what you're advocating here, and yet I do have to add some additional comment that this alone will not reduce the cost of health care in Alaska. Mr. Chairman, we have lots of unique situations here. Probably the biggest one is the 80th percentile rule, which requires that out-of-network providers be paid at the 80th percentile in a geographic area of charges for that service. Mr. Chairman, and I will share this with your staff so you can pass it on to the committee. I was interested in the slide you had in the packet, and your slides weren't numbered, Mr. Chairman, so I can't cite the slide number, but it was a map that showed the evolution of CON in the U.S. That was the title on it, and the year was 2017. So that's pretty recent information, which I appreciate. It's hard to get current information on healthcare costs, I found out as I pursued the 80th percentile rule. But in any case, with this most current information, you showed states that did not have, that have no CON regulation. And so on the map shows Idaho and North Dakota. So that was very interesting to me, Mr. Chairman, because in pursuing the 80th percentile, working with Director Lori Wing-Hyer, Division of Insurance, she asked Oliver Wyman, a consultant organization, to take a look at reimbursement issues. And I was interested in whether reimbursement rates in those two states, Idaho and North Dakota, were lower than Alaska. And turns out they were, Mr. Chairman, and I'll provide this rather than read out the numbers, which can be rather, I don't know, mind-numbing. I'll give this to your staff, and he can reproduce it for the committee. But interestingly, Montana, which does have CON, had pretty much the same percent average reimbursement rate as Idaho and North Dakota, which don't have CON. So, and they were significantly lower than Alaska. So I would argue, Mr. Chairman, that I support the CON repeal that you are advocating here. I do think a point has been made that without something, no regulations can be written. So obviously we have to have that foundation piece to write regulations. But this being only one piece, that the 80th percentile is a significant driver of healthcare costs. And, Mr. Chairman, you cannot address the 80th percentile without addressing balanced billing, otherwise known as surprise billing, as consumers feel. So I'm going to provide this to your staff. I think it expands certainly the conversation, but also informs the conversation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And just to let committee members know, we're going to set the bill aside, and if folks could provide and see if we can get Senator Begich's questions answered through Ledge Legal in a timely manner here. We may not have that, but we'll try our best to ask for that, and we'll ask for any amendments or recommendations to our office, we'll say Wednesday at noon, so we can try to conduct business appropriately. Senator Begich, good job.
Just 4 points. I don't know if I have the capacity, and I certainly don't have the expertise of Senator Giesel and others in the body, Senator Olson, to write those amendments, but I do. There are four areas that have risen up in the testimony, and the first was the one that we've talked about, the regulations. I want to thank your staff for getting back to me to clarify that so we could be clear to Ledge Legal. I appreciate that very much. So that's one area. The second one was just based on the question of this that seems to evolve for me is the accreditation process. Again, that might be regulatory, but maybe there's a way that I don't know if there is such an accreditation process for surgery centers and things like that, or whether there's an accrediting body. I don't know any of that, but that seemed to me to be a concern around this, that there be some method of at least knowing we're getting quality care. The Matsu person made me think about that question, the Matsu Borough person. The third was the question that Senator Stevens has brought up, and that maybe there's a difference in terms of areas covered by a CON and not covered by a CON. I don't know. I'm thinking of local hospitals and not wanting to see, you know, local hospitals. I've had to deal a little bit with some issues around Wrangell and some others that I wouldn't want to see a hospital disappear in some of these communities that only have one. So I'm not sure, Mr. Chairman, if there's something you can do to address that. And then the final question that sort of percolated up is how much could be done through regulation here as opposed to statutory change, and I don't know the answer to those questions. Generally, I want to sort of affiliate myself with the comments that Senator Giesel has made about the need to comprehensively look at healthcare when you're lowering the process, lowering the costs of healthcare. There's a number of different issues out here. How do we build a larger pool to reduce risk? How do we look at the 80% rule? How do we do transparency, which came up? Two of the people on opposite sides testified on the transparency issue, which you, Senator Giesel and Representative Sponholz took a lead in last year, and really getting meaningful transparency so that we do drive the cost down. I was encouraged that the Bridge Network helped drive provider costs down, and that was a shock to me. I did not know that. I just read the sheet on the Bridge Network, and I'm kind of wondering how I can get one of those trips out of state. But you know, that's the kind of thing that makes some kind of sense, too, because it's less invasive. So my jury was out when CON was brought to us here. My jury is still kind of out on it, but I understand the reasons why you would support this and why this bill would make sense. But I want to know the answers to some of these questions before I'm fully on board. But that said, I think that the debate has been good in that regard, that we've got these questions out on the table. So I'm hopeful that what we end up crafting is meaningful. And I just don't know how I would go about writing those amendments. So I have to think about that. So I may not have any for you by Wednesday.
If you do or just have those contemplations, please just let our office know. And also, you are qualified for a similar program, similar to the Bridge Network, as being a state of Alaska employee.
Except I'm not under the health insurance. I'm a retiree right now and not covered by that. I forgot to ask. I did ask about rural hospitals in Idaho and North Dakota on Wednesday last week, and just knowing if any rural hospitals had closed in those two communities. And so I'm hoping still to get an answer to that question. Thank you.
Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I understand the process, and we heard several pieces of testimony from all individuals who work for the same organization and have similar concerns. It does concern me, though, and I know when you do invited testimony, you invite people that agree with you. That's just the way the process works. But I am surprised that we've not reached out to some of the smaller hospitals. There are three of them in my community, in Cordova, Homer, and Kodiak. Others were mentioned in on the peninsula as well. And I'm just sorry that we've not had an opportunity to hear from them. And I don't know, maybe we've closed a public testimony and maybe it's too late for them to participate, but I would have wished that there would have been at least an attempt to reach those folks and have them testify. You know, otherwise we're just leaving it up to chance, and maybe they don't know this is going on and they'll have other opportunities to testify, but this is a very important committee dealing with this subject, and I would like to have heard from more small hospitals.
And this is a topic that has been talked upon for numerous years, and was also, my understanding, was also part of a conversation of a recent ASHNA conference as well. This is something that all hospitals have the opportunity, if they're members of the Health Association, to be part of, and we obviously didn't try to hide. It was in the Journal of Commerce article and a couple of other articles as well. Newspapers statewide that talked upon this issue as well. So it's hard trying to make sure all the stakeholders are involved, but I do know that the Hospital Association and other large hospitals were notified or were here, but obviously we didn't hear from one larger ones in the state as well. I mean, they were fully we didn't hear from the one of the other larger Anchorage hospitals as well. We just try to make sure that the public is always involved and everyone's always welcome to submit their hopefully their written comments, and as the bill continues on, we'll continue to try to track those and continue to disperse those comments as they come out. Senator Giesel, do you have enough? Okay. Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I support the concept here. I think this is a good start, and as has been said, this does not solve the health care problem in Alaska, but it goes, in my view, a ways of doing that. There's probably about three things that that I'll need to know to move forward here. But before we go there, I hope the hospitals know that what we're trying to do is solve a conundrum. We're not trying to destroy hospitals. They are a vital part of our healthcare world. And this whole idea of cost shifting is their biggest concern, and that is they bill the highest rate for those who can pay it and pay the subsidized rate. And quite frankly, I'm up in the Health and Social Services Committee. We're talking about those very rates even today. So those are part of the conundrums we have. How do we actually pay for services for the indigent population at a level that can be afforded to pay realistically without having to force people to subsidize those costs, you know? So I'm very sympathetic with that. However, I think the one statement that gets my attention, well, there's two statements. One of them is that people are already going out, whether it's the state of Alaska employee health plan or whether it's any other trust that's doing the same thing. And I've talked to some of the, even some of the local providers, and they say, well, you know, you need to support local hire. The trouble is, if it's so high that you can get it less expensively somewhere else in the world, chances are you're going to go there. And that's true whether it's driving a dozer or delivering health care. It's just a fact. But one of the things that overcharge versus cut rate, I thought that was kind of interesting. Because really, that's a conundrum we find ourselves in, and that is how to get the indigent care that is forced upon us by a federal rule, basically, that we want to have good ERs. Though, if we had a bunch of ERs open up and they couldn't make it, how long do you suppose they'd stay open? You know? And so I'm a little less sympathetic to the hospitals on that account. And I've watched in my own hometown, the hospital is a community hospital, but they do become the place where the doors can actually close to entrance into our community for health care. And that's kind of, we're small enough to be a monopoly, but we're growing enough to be competitive. And that's kind of the interesting balance that we have to do. So by taking the certificate of need off, what you're going to do is you're going to say, there's an open door here. Then it's a matter of, will the hospital be able to retain a good quality competitive edge? And so, but be aware that we're going to have to talk about that when it comes to Medicaid, and we're going to have to talk about it when it comes to ER care. We have tried to solve that in a variety of different ways. For example, we have what they call frequent flyers, who are drug-using and alcohol-using people that we end up taking care of. We've tried everywhere we can, from pickup programs to places where we can service them to help them get sober, services for behavioral health. Those are still going to go on. They're not going away. But I got to tell you, up in Fairbanks, I tip my hat to the hospital who has picked up those services where the state just can't seem to get its feet under it. So I'm reluctant to take that. So as we, I'm going to support taking the certificate of need off, because I think the process needs to be dealt with. And that's why I asked the question to ASHNA, have they proposed suggestions, and we'll probably talk to our own department about what can be done better. But the journey needs to go in order for us to get that pressure to say, how can we do it better? So I'm going to be supportive of this based on, first of all, good economic principles. But secondly, we got to change the way we're doing business in Alaska. We can't afford to do it any longer, and people are going to leave. And if we have to cross-subsidize indigent care, then maybe we're not taking care of our indigent people properly or holding them accountable or helping them. So, but we are chasing the payers away, and that's just got to change. So I'm going to be supportive of this as a process, but I am going to ask the department how that feedback from the variety of different hospitals. And by the way, the smaller hospitals in Alaska generally are an arm of a hospital organization already in Alaska. They already cross-subsidize, so they take the best payers out of the larger cities and help the smaller cities. So, for example, Providence has one in Valdez, and I know that without them having a good profit base in Anchorage, the hospital in Valdez probably would not make it. But we have to face the realities, and this is what the governor's put in our place on facing realities of, can we afford to do what we're doing, and if not, how? So I think this is one element that has to be laid out there. Otherwise, we won't face the realities of it. So I don't think I'm going to be able to come up with an amendment. You've put this date out to 2024, and I guess I need to have the question reiterated to me because I must have missed one of the meetings, that this gives time for people to do the planning, both in economics and in regulation. Is that true, Mr. Chairman?
That was the intent.
Okay. That's a question that probably we need to get reiterated from both the practitioners, hospitals, and from the department as a process.
And Senator Kaika, we will ask the department to see if they could share any data that happened during those working meetings with the Hospital Association as well. Senator Giesel? Sorry, I keep thinking I saw your hand.
No.
All right. With that concludes our business for today. We expect to bring the CS for Senate Bill 93 and possibly SB 1 back up under bills previously heard and scheduled on either Wednesday and or Friday. We will keep your offices attuned. As soon as we know, we will notify you and the public of what's on our agenda and dockets for that time. I just want to thank everyone for attending and providing testimony and having a lively discussion on this topic. And we are adjourned at 2:44 p.m.